Hi, I'm Bob O'Haver. Welcome to the Why Meditate podcast. I'm asking questions of teachers, scientists, and religious leaders. The questions are, why meditate? What is mindfulness and what does it mean to live a mindful life? What is the difference between meditation, contemplation, and prayer? And how do we promote compassion in ourselves and the world around us? I've learned that over my life that in sports, like martial arts and baseball, going back to basics always helped me understand how to deal with the issues I was having. I hope these interviews will do the same for each of us. Thank you for your support. Let us know what you think by making sure you comment on whymeditatela.com, Facebook, or Twitter. Thanks again. Now on with our discussion.
I'm with Heather Preet.
Facilitator. Yeah.
And you have a certificate from UCLA Mindfulness, and have worked with them a lot.
That's right. And I teach their courses as well.
Right. And you teach those over at the Den in Hollywood.
That's
and we're
right.
On the Brea. We're on the Brea. Have to remember where we are.
Yeah. We're at the Den on the corner of 4th and La Brea, which is a wonderful space that has drop-ins, which would be you can just come and meditate and get a little talk and sound baths, and this is actually where I have my personal office for my one-on-one. My one-on-one clients. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for meeting me
and
talking about these things and
yes.
just getting this whole thing rolling.
Yeah.
The first question I have is just really simple, and I explained to you where this came from and I don't know how I started, but one of these questions was just really simple. Why should we meditate?
Hmm.
Why is it important?
Well, I mean, it's funny because I don't like to use the word should too much.
Okay.
Because really it's a choice,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's the essence of the practice is choice. We have more choice, more freedom when we have more clarity on the different aspects of self and how they work together and how they respond to our inner and outer world. So, mm-hmm. you know, there are many different ways to get there, quite honestly. There's many paradigms, and some people are more naturally mindful than other people. I know that I can speak for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So in my case, this practice was so important because I had a lot of suffering. I was dealing with quite a few very difficult emotions that we would call chronic, that didn't seem to rise and fall. Of course, they always do. We just miss those moments that they're not there,
mm-hmm.
right? But I had really developed into a trait, so a trait of anxiety or a trait of depression, right? I really identified with those, and they seemed to be my constant companions.
Mm.
And I didn't know or understand that there was an aspect of the self that is meant to care for those emotions.
Mm.
So I did the natural thing that everybody does, which is to try to run away from them. And we
right.
try to run away from them in many different ways. And I tried them all. And I'll tell you,
right.
it doesn't work. We get tricked because we get something called temporary cessation of suffering, which means that in that moment, we may be releasing chemicals or be distracted, so we don't feel the suffering acutely in that moment. However, the internal knot or the difficulty, the energy is not really transformed. And so it just arises again and
right.
again and again. So for me, it was important because I needed to understand the mechanisms of mind. I had to understand the mechanisms of how I relate to my thoughts. And sort of how thoughts, sensations, feelings, actions, beliefs, worldviews all work together.
Yeah.
And so once I can understand that by looking deeply through practice, and that's what this is insight. It's not some woo-woo mm-hmm. weird thing where we're trying to warp your brain. It's so that you can actually just look and say, well, what is it to be human? What mechanisms are at play here when there's a result? What causes lead to what conditions? And then in that, we can also understand what causes lead to positive conditions.
Right.
So I didn't understand compassion and cultivating positive emotions, and I needed those things.
So we can limit our suffering that way.
Mm-hmm.
And when you use the word insight,
I would say instead of limiting, I would say we learn how to hold our suffering so that it can transform.
Right.
If we add, it just like if a child scrapes its knee, and you hold the child and you rock the child, the knee is still scraped. You know, difficulty or pain is there. We transform the suffering because we add love, right?
So,
Sure. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, super.
What were you going to ask, though?
You brought up the word insight. Because sometimes they call this insight meditation. And is insight and mindfulness, are those two things interchangeable? Or are they a little different? But
yeah.
Because it's giving us that ability to slow down or stop or see things as they are.
So insight arises from mindfulness. So if we can contact our mindful awareness, right, and we want to drop that into the body, insight arises. Insight into our inner world as to how all these mechanisms work together. Right? So it's called Vipassana or insight, or it might be called mindfulness. And we can start to understand that these are really, all these different energies work together. So mindfulness we can't see, right? But we can see the effects of mindfulness. That's how we know it's real. That's why we can say to people who haven't practiced, oh, this is a real thing, because we can see when we practice, the brain changes, right? So mindfulness in of itself we can't see, but we can see its effects. And then the result is insight. You know, we know.
So the action is the mindfulness, and the result is the insight.
And then someone might say, well, no, the mindfulness is an energy, it's an essence. It's very interesting. So right now in our common culture, because this became secularized, I think that different people will have different languaging.
Do you think it gets a little too woo-woo sometimes when people talk about it?
Mindfulness or about meditation?
Yeah, the meditation thing, you know, and it's just that. I mean, how do you see that?
Well, you know, I'm going to say, listen. So, I'm going to be straightforward with this, which is, quite honestly, if we can only hope that if you have someone who's practicing correctly, that a desire to only speak truth arises.
Right.
That's actually a side effect of insight. We really see how being dishonest or adding things or being something we're not causes suffering. That's part of the insight you get.
Sure.
And so it makes you want to turn to only speaking truth. That's actually from 2,500 plus years ago when this started, there was this beautiful illustration in the Pure Land teachings, which this is Buddhism, not secular mindfulness, but just from the origins, right? We want to know our origins. But there's this beautiful description of the Buddha spread his tongue so wide that it could basically hold all of the tiny little aspects of every particle within it, like all within one space. And what that means is it came from an Indian way of expressing, which is that your tongue is wide, you're speaking truth, right? So we can understand that when we see clearly, when we see the cause and effect of things, when we see how suffering arises, that we wish to speak truth.
Right.
So that gets me to your question. If we're practicing and what the desire to speak truth arises, then what I would say is, to the thinking mind, and when someone tries to describe an experience, an insight that they have that can't be described in words, and then is transferred to your thinking mind as you process the words, yes, it's going to be woo-woo.
Right,
because
we
have lost the essence of the true insight.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I understand, yes.
Now, and then we also have the other side, which I don't think we're talking about, which is when people kind of put on a persona rather than actually doing the work of looking deeply. And, and we all have, listen, we all have all aspects.
So.
Yeah. And also we all have all aspects of everything. So there's not judgment in that. But yes, that can arise during part of the practice where we feel like we have to be a certain way.
Sure.
But I would just say it's impossible to describe some insight. And yes, it sounds woo-woo. And the way your brain would interpret it would be woo-woo. And that's why the whole thing is you're supposed to just have experiential knowledge.
So that it's true for you
viscerally. It's true for you. And actually, traditionally, we're told not to share our insights. Because it does just what you said, creates a concept.
Right.
It can do a couple things. It can create envy or jealousy. It can create striving or having a desired result, which will bump you off your cushion, out of your mindfulness, right? And then it can cause doubt. meaning I don't believe in this practice. That sounds ridiculous.
Sure, sure.
I abandon.
Cool.
Mm, did that help?
Yeah, that was great. That was a great answer, actually. Okay. I appreciate that. Yeah. The next one is, do we need a teacher?
Yes.
With this kind of thing? Okay, that was just a quick answer. And a community. It was those
yes,
two things.
Yes.
How do those work? I mean, because there's a lot of apps out now, mm-hmm. and there's, you know, you can go online and you can find all these
well,
things.
Well, listen, you can connect to a teacher through a book. So right. Thich Nhat Hanh, well, actually before Thich Nhat Hanh, long, long, long ago, before I even knew what was practice was, and I was suffering so deeply, I happened onto a book when I was kind of stuck in a other people would say it's amazing, but I was nannying at the time in the Hamptons, mm-hmm. and I felt very isolated. I was dealing with a lot of loneliness, a lot of difficult emotions. I had just had a breakup, and I had an hour or some break. I was working, you know, most of the time, and I went to a bookstore, and I found this book, and it was called A Heart as Wide as the World, and I just love that title because I always was hyper-empathetic, so I mm-hmm. thought they were talking about empathy, which sure. is different than compassion. But anyway, I grabbed that book, and in that book, Sharon talks about her teacher, Deepa Ma. Mm-hmm. So mother of Deepa Ma, this enlightened little woman. And Deepa Ma entered my heart through the book. Mm. I never forgot that. And I remember reading about this little woman, and I just, to this day, it's just etched in my brain, reading about her compassion and her kindness and her equanimity and ease. Mm. And it spoke to me in such a way that I had left the book there. I'd forgotten about the book. I didn't know where it went. I didn't know the name of the book, and I didn't know the author. And it wasn't until about 20 years later. I can't remember time anymore.
Right.
You get to a certain age and you're like, I don't know.
It was
a long time later when Diana mentioned... I asked Diana because she mentioned Deepa Ma. Mm-hmm. I asked Diana Winston. I ran up to her. I said, oh, my God, there was this book, Hardest Way of the World. I never heard of it again. Did you write that book because it talks about Deepa Ma?
Right.
And she said, no, Sharon did.
Oh, wow.
So, cool. And that you could go study with Sharon. So, yes, we can have teachers in non-traditional ways, mm-hmm. right? So some of us will do that, connect to an author whose voice waters your heart.
Right.
Now, the problem with practicing alone is that you're kind of stumbling along a path. Do I take a left? Do I take a right? Am I trying? Is there too much efforting? Is there not enough proper efforting? Mm-hmm. And it's nice to have a teacher to bounce things off of and to kind of help you along the way, because right. the teacher's already taken that part of the path, so they can help you to find your way through it. Mm-hmm. And then finally, also traditionally, teachers were meant to spot different temperaments in different students, and the teachings will be different for each student based on their temperament.
Oh, right.
So you might pick up a book that's Zen. Mm-hmm. If I picked up a book that a Zen book initially, and I hadn't started with compassion practices, I don't know how good that would have been for me at the time. I had to have a different doorway in.
Right.
And there's many different doorways in. There's something like thousands of doors. There's doorways in as far as our sensory observations. Mm-hmm. There's doorways in. Can we do a heart practice? Are we doing a single point in concentration practice? What is right for us in this moment? And a good teacher will be able to say, I think this practice will really balance your mind. Maybe you want to try it if you're interested.
Right. And is that where community comes in too?
So this is so important. So traditionally, this isn't the traditional teachings, it was Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So it was like the teacher is someone who kind of had taken the path, the Dharma, which are the teachings, mm-hmm. and then the Sangha's community. And it said that if a monk leaves his monastery and goes out into the world, it's like you're going out into the mountains with wild lions,
right?
So the Sangha helps support our practice in a way that's very nourishing and important. So having that community, that's why I'm so happy about things like the Den, because before you had to be a Buddhist to practice, and here it's all-inclusive, which is what these practices are. Buddhism is not a religion.
Right.
Religion can grow around anything, but actually this is just a practice for human beings to have insight into what it is to be human. And as we come together and we support each other in this way, our practice flourishes.
Great. That's a good answer. Now, we already talked about mindfulness, and we all talked about mindfulness in general. Can mm-hmm. we, there's a lot of talk about living a mindful life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
When you're living a mindful life?
So, you know, the problem with not the problem, what am I going to say? I would say the slippery slope of hearing things like that is that mm-hmm. people can think they're not living up to something.
Mm.
You know, we have mindfulness is being used in this way that sort of like have gratitude was used for a long time in our culture.
Right.
Like, oh, be grateful because other people don't have that food.
Right.
And instead of the heart of gratitude was just an expansive heart of interconnectivity, because of the way it was presented, it caused shame or guilt, which is a contraction. Okay? Mm-hmm. So it didn't have the essence of the word anymore. The word no longer touched the aspect of the self that it was meant to represent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when we walk around and we see, oh, this is a mindful menu, or I had someone actually say to me the other day, oh, that's not very mindful. You know, it was something about like that I hadn't had a chance to do something earlier or something like this.
Right.
And we can start using mindfulness in a way that causes contraction in individuals.
Right.
And so I want to be really careful when we say live mindfully,
mm-hmm.
because oftentimes that's a lot of fodder for the inner critic to catch on to.
Not other people, but what we're telling ourselves.
That's right. That's what I mean.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. And it, you know, ultimately, whatever it's used in society is what it is, or what people say is what people say, but what's happening within you?
Right.
So if we think, oh, that's good and it's bad not to live mindfully, then we're automatically out of mindfulness.
Right.
Right?
Sure.
So
sure.
We will walk around saying, oh, good, I did that. Okay, I'm safe. Oh, I'm bad because I did that unmindfully.
Right.
There's a beautiful story that Thich Nhat Hanh tells. And he says that he was trying to hang up a picture. So he had a hammer and a nail. And he said, I wasn't being very mindful, and so I hit my thumb with the hammer. So listen to this. Thich Nhat Hanh, who we know, and it's undisputed, is the master of mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear.
Sure.
And he's been celebrated by Martin Luther King, nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. He's the real deal.
Right.
He writes in his book, For All to See, I wasn't very mindful and I hit my thumb with the hammer.
Sure.
So what is he telling us there?
Is that all of us can be not mindful.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then the next thing he says is, one hand didn't judge the other. The right hand put down the hammer immediately to care for the left hand because it knew that we're all in this together. We're interconnected.
Right?
Right?
Cool.
So we separate from ourselves when we think I'm supposed to be mindful. That wasn't mindful.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, can we give ourselves compassion?
Right.
Can we say, I suffer in this moment, so I must not have had my mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
This hurts. I care about this suffering. Right?
Right.
You know.
No, I appreciate that description. That was I don't know that I was thinking about that when I wrote the question, but
I
appreciate that. I appreciate that because it's a real important way to look at it.
Yes.
The and here's one. There's just, what do you see the difference between contemplation and meditation? Mm. Is there a difference?
Yeah. A contemplation practice is a meditation practice.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different types of meditation practices. So we can have something like single point in concentration, where we focus exclusively on one thing and we push everything else out,
right?
Or we can have more mindfulness, where we're resting our awareness on something in the present moment, but we're aware that other things are here,
mm-hmm.
right? And then contemplation practices are interesting and they're actually super effective. We need mindfulness in order to do a proper contemplation practice.
Okay.
Right? So the first thing you need to be able to do is you need to be able to see your inner world.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then as we contemplate, we can sort of suss things out. There's many different types of contemplation. So is there one specifically you were thinking of? Or should I make an example?
I'm just looking at it in general when I was looking at the different practices.
Yeah.
Those two, I find in a lot of classes, are used interchangeably.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And I don't know that they are interchangeable. I mean, they are both meditations.
Yeah, yeah.
But I hear people using them in different ways.
Yeah.
And that's why I came up with the question, because I'm hearing different
Yeah, interesting.
Different definitions, or I think.
Yeah,
you know, enough for me to question it anyway.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think that I'm part of the community that may have slightly different languaging for things than that traditionally, because I'm part of a secular community, right? And we're sussing out our languaging for sure, right? So when you get into things like this, when we say contemplation practice, the way I view a contemplation practice, or the way I was taught a contemplation practice is that I may bring something up and notice the way that all of the aspects of the self work together, and then notice, is this going towards my well-being or away from my well-being? That's one contemplation practice, right? Another you can do a contemplation practice in which you're sort of bringing to mind a wisdom phrase and letting it sink in, and sort of like, okay, so where in my life is this wisdom mind coming, and does that give me a sense of well-being? Where might it be lacking, right?
Is it a place to work on issues? I mean, when you come up with issues when you're meditating, the mind goes and you put these things away. When and how do you deal with those things that you put away that you're going to work on later?
Okay, this is interesting. And I have to say, I can't speak for everyone and every
practice.
This is all from my perspective and my experience. Those things don't matter. You don't ever have to get back to them. What happened in your body? Mm-hmm. What happened? What's calling for care right now? The thoughts need to be unhooked from, and we can have these thoughts, but we also need not to follow the thoughts.
Right.
But do we drop in what's here right now that's asking for care right now? So if I had that worry, if I had that plan, if I had that thought, it may even be disguised as a contemplation practice, which I think we have to have some skill if we're going to do contemplation practices, so we're not going into thinking.
Sure.
We have a stabilized mind when we contemplate. That's the difference between contemplation and thinking. Mm-hmm. So we even if those thoughts come, I'm not interested in the thoughts or figuring them out. What is happening in here?
Right.
What's in my inner world? What is now arising? And as we look with our mindful awareness and insight, wisdom comes, and then we know what to do next.
Right.
So we really never have to nosh over all that stuff that goes through our head. And trust me, you're still going to eat your eggs, your breakfast, and you're still going to know how to drive your car.
Sure.
All those things are still here. The thinking mind's not a problem. We just need to know how to relate to it. And in this moment, what we're relating to is our inner world. So the thoughts may have triggered a sensation in the body that we call an emotion, which are connected to an internal knot. And that internal knot is something that may have arisen from our store consciousness. It was watered by that thought, and now it's in our conscious awareness. So if it's made its presence known to us by arising in our conscious awareness, then it's asking for care.
Right.
And in that moment, it is our responsibility as a human being to care for it. Mm-hmm. That's just how I live now. And take it or leave it. No one has to live like me.
Sure.
You know, no one else is going to be, maybe even that's listening to this will do this. But it's a very ancient psychology that stands up to the test of science. So anyway, this aspect arises, and now we can make a choice. Do I want to push it back down? Do I want to run from it? Do I want to drink and numb it out? Or do I want to care for it? And we need insight in order to connect the heart to this aspect of the self.
Right, so that gives us the space to be able to decide that.
Because
we're not attached to it necessarily.
Yes. Right. But we get very attached to our stories and our thoughts, don't we?
Yes.
Okay.
Most definitely.
So if we're attached, I mean, then we want to challenge ourselves to unhook from whatever we're really attached from, and then see what arises, because that's what's calling for attention.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
No, I totally understand. Yeah. Well, thank you. The last last question I have is, I think the world needs more compassion.
Oh, yeah.
In general.
Yeah.
And
how do you
facilitate that in yourself, in your own world?
Thank you.
I mean, how does that affect you? How do you manifest that
compassion?
Thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that question. I think it's really our responsibility as practitioners to learn the answer to that question for ourselves and really practice that. Because like you said, we do need more compassion warriors. We need people that are holding space for suffering in this world and who can help to transform others by caring and keep teaching them to care for their internal difficulties with love and touch into their own compassion mind. So one thing I wanted to touch on in that question is, yes, the world needs more compassion, but I'm also going to tell you that the world is compassion. Mm-hmm. That there, when we look deeply underneath all of the obstructions that human beings are walking around with, what are they guarding? They're guarding the most tender aspects of the self, and those tender aspects of the self are asking for love. And as soon as we start clearing out the obstructions and those aspects of the self are able to fully live in this world, they receive that love. Mm-hmm. You know, and part of it is our responsibility, but it's also looking out to see, I mean, our responsibility is also not just internal work, but look around you. The trees are feeding you oxygen. The sun is giving you warmth, caring for all of the beautiful plants that are giving you nutrition. The earth will always hold you on its ground, combined with the blanket of gravity, you know, from like the Native Americans, I think it's a beautiful Father Sky and Mother Earth. It's like the arms and the gentle blanket, you know. So I would say I turn continually to seeing where compassion and love already is here. Mm-hmm. And really allow myself to know that even though difficulties arise in the world, there is so much good here. There's so much to have joy about. There's so much supporting us. You know, we can run around and cause so many problems for ourselves.
Yes.
But ultimately, is the earth ever going to just, like, stop being? Mm-hmm. Is gravity going to disappear? Are the trees going to say, he gets oxygen but not you because you're a jerk?
Right.
No, they love us anyway. You know, and in turn, we can then our compassion and our love grows when we can start to see how we are actually supported by the world and this earth. So continually turning towards that. And I can tell you about my own personal practice if you're interested.
Right. Well, the question comes up is, do we find compassion through our practice when we're doing our practice? Does it come naturally? Is it something we need to strive for?
You don't have to strive.
We've got to work for it.
That's a really beautiful question. And so the answer is no. You do not have to strive for it. It's already here. Mm-hmm. It is something that is intrinsically within you. And it naturally arises through insight. It naturally arises through mindfulness. Mm-hmm. We can also do specific cultivation practices. But I think the essence of your question is, you know, where is it? It's inside of you. And when we practice, we're gently clearing the mud off the diamond. So that diamond, it cannot be harmed. It cannot be defiled. And it is always just as brilliant as it ever was, even as it's covered with mud. And every time we sit and we get more insight, clearing off one little facet of the diamond, and maybe we see a little glimmer of that beautiful compassion mind that all of us have within us. And then we just continue practicing, and pretty soon, all of a sudden, what you notice is that you can rest in the brilliance of your heart.
Right.
That you have equanimity, joy, loving kindness, compassion, and they're all one. And within that space comes that fearlessness that allows us to stand in the face of difficulty and help hold space for those who have not yet found that in themselves. Mm. Those that are still suffering, those who are still think that they can fight hate with hate,
right,
or anger with anger. And we can look to the great leader, the great peace leaders such as Martin Luther King and Thich Nhat Hanh, and we can see what is consistent. What is consistent in the Dalai Lama saying, my friends, my enemies? What's consistent in Mother Teresa risking her health?
Right.
The consistency is the compassion mind.
Mm-hmm.
That they did not hate, they refused to hate. They saw hate as suffering. And so they had compassion for all of those who tried to harm them. and they refused to fight back. They only stood with love, and those are the people that make indelible marks in our history.
So it's not something we, because we have it inside of us, it's not something we need to go find.
There is no
difference.
We just
need to awaken it.
That's
or
right.
Open it up in us, or as you say, shine the diamond.
Yeah, cleaning the obstacles. So there's no difference between you and Thich Nhat Hanh.
Right.
It's just that we haven't cleared all of our obscurations. And as you clear them out, so that is sort of what I'm talking about. So with mindfulness, we have a secular practice called RAIN, which is recognize, right, accept, investigate, non-identification. Mm-hmm. And it's how we're working with difficult emotions. And as I said before, these emotions don't go away. We're not trying to get rid of them. They transform into wisdom. They transform, right, into insight and compassion and understanding. They transform. So one energy, it's like, let's think of a recipe. Mm-hmm. One energy into the other creates something else. So I don't know anything about baking bread, but I had this example that I would use, and I don't know if it's accurate, but let's say we have flat bread. It has flour, water, eggs, or whatever you put, right, in bread, and it's a flat bread. And then perhaps we take that same recipe, but we add yeast, and now it's a loaf. Would we say the flat bread went away and the loaf appeared?
Right.
No, it transformed because we added another ingredient. So when we have anger and we add compassion, wisdom arises, understanding arises, right? Mm-hmm. So no mud, no lotus. The difficulties that are here today are the soil for the awakening of tomorrow.
Hmm.
And we have to keep our eye on that. When, right, we become overwhelmed or we think that things are going to just continue to be difficult, we have to turn our awareness towards the fact that from great difficulty arises great change and beauty.
Yes.
Right? We have to remember that. I mean, if we're going to be the compassionate warriors of our time, we cannot let ourselves be overwhelmed by the difficulties. We must remember no mud, no lotus. See all the beautiful voices that are arising, the unity that's coming, and continue to love. Do not succumb to hate.
Mm-hmm.
Do not succumb to self and other. Right?
Right. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
If there's any last thing you wanted to add, you know, is there anything else,
yeah,
that you wanted to, that you were, that came up?
Yes, I mean,
if not, that's cool too.
Yeah. No, I guess I would just like to say that I just want to reiterate that we all have the capacity for so much more than we know. And we are so much larger and so much more powerful than we know. And I can say that to you day and night, in and out, and you don't have to believe what I'm saying. But the fact is that if we look deeply and we see it for ourselves, then we know, and we can act through that.
Right.
Right. So give yourself a chance to look inside, you know, to,
right,
know how amazing you are, who you are, who you truly are in this world.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to limit ourselves anymore. We have the practice, you know.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I really appreciate the time and the, mm-hmm, energy and what you had to say. And I thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh, it's so my pleasure. Thank you so much for asking me, and bless your heart for this beautiful bodhicitta that you're representing right now by sharing healing practices with the world to help transform their suffering. So I send a blessing for your bodhicitta mind to expand and blossom and grow, and bless all of your lifetimes.
Thank you.
Thank
so
you.
Much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. And remember to leave a comment. Subscribe to the podcast on either Apple or Android. Search for Why Meditate. Now, take a minute or two to take it in. Close your eyes, and you can sit with what you just heard. The music will continue for about 3.5 minutes. Have a beautiful day.
Ooh.